Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Costco Business Center, offering delivery to Anchorage Air Cargo companies for shipments to rural Alaska for business and home. More at CostcoBusinessDelivery.com.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Everybody has suffered from a headache at some point in their lives, but when are headaches abnormal? There are many types of headaches, just to name a few: allergy, caffeine withdrawal, cervicogenic, chronic daily headaches, migraines, cluster, sinus and tension headaches. While for many people a headache is a headache, there are characteristics of each, such as the onset, the severity, triggers, and auras that can help diagnose which type of headache you have. This is important because the treatment may differ greatly between the different types of headaches. How are headaches related to chronic pain and pain management treatment plans? The treatments often overlap, and given the time, we will investigate this link as well. Today on Line One, we will be finding out about headaches and chronic pain management with Dr. Sola Olamakin and PA Eric Severson. Please give us a call, toll-free, statewide, 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage at 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Or email me at line1, that's spelled out, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at alaskapublic.org. Okay, let's get into it. Dr. Sola Olamakin, did I get that totally correct?
Yeah, that was good.
All right, you say it way better than I do. But Dr. Sola Olamakin, I would like to introduce you to our listeners, give you a chance to tell us about yourself, how you got into pain management, what do you like doing?
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us on this morning. I hope that we can have a good conversation. My name is Sola Olamakin, and I am a pain medicine doctor in Alaska. I'm board certified in pain medicine, pediatric anesthesiology, and anesthesiology, and I had the good fortune of going all over the country to train. I finished off at UW for my pain medicine fellowship, and while I was there, I came up to Alaska, decided this was the place to be, and knew one day I would come back. So about 5 years ago, we came back and here with the family and doing good work.
Yeah, it's a great place to live. It's a great place to work. In terms of, pain management, what is your, we're talking about headaches today, but what's your bread and butter? What do you like doing with the pain management, or why do you do that?
You know, pain management is, It's challenging. It's very challenging. I think you're dealing with a lot of people not at their best. They're hurting. They're suffering. They're in pain. And it takes an amount of diligence to be able to deal with that. My patients require quite a bit of attention, and I'm willing to do it, and I like and I enjoy doing it. I think it makes a difference when you can take a person who's suffering and help them get to not suffer. They may still have pain, because pain is life, but suffering is not always necessary. So if we can take away the suffering and give people the quality of life that allows them to live the lives that they want to live with their families, with their work, with their devotions and their commitments, then that's important. That's what we do.
That's great. I like that. So pain is life, but suffering doesn't have to be
exactly
always part of life, right? I like that a lot. So, and your PA is here today, Eric Severson. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you. And I want to also give you the opportunity to provide our listeners a little bit about yourself, where you came from, how long you've been doing this. Tell us about Eric.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate the opportunity. I'm Eric Severson. Retired Air Force. I was trained in the Air Force. I did emergency medicine and primary care family practice for at least 10, 12 years in the Air Force before I retired. Moved up here to Alaska and started working with pain in pain management. It's, like Sola said, it's a very challenging field. The I guess the uh, best part of it for me is seeing the patients regain their function. Mm-hmm. And like you said, they're may not be out of pain, but they're at least able to function and go back to fishing and hiking and enjoying all the wonderful activities up here.
Yeah, the reason why most of us are up here.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into headaches a little bit here. And for listeners of the show, you know, I always like to start with the normal before we get into the abnormal. So, you know, headaches seem to be part of life for a lot of people, or everyone, you know, at some point I can say has had a headache, and there's many reasons for this. But what's sort of, I guess the first question is, what's normal? Are headaches normal? You know, what's your take on that, Dr. Olomakin?
At some point in life, about 95% of people on Earth, I think, will have a headache. It's hard to say it's abnormal. It's so rampant. It's the human condition. Mm-hmm. So I think the question that I address is not, are headaches normal, their life, is this particular headache allowable, right? So at what point does a headache become abnormal is probably more the question that I look at. And that the answer to that is when it starts interfering with the quality of a person's life, when the headache becomes a hindrance to the person fulfilling the needs that they need to in life, then it becomes abnormal.
Okay. I think that's a great definition. You know, we might get headaches for, you know, I get headaches on occasion, especially if I haven't had enough caffeine, which isn't often. I usually do get enough caffeine, but, I notice that or other things, just stress. And so, but it doesn't impact my life on a daily basis. Like what is, so what would you consider to be, besides just interfering with life, like, what's an abnormal headache? What are some characteristics?
So I think an objective calculus of a headache would be a headache that lasts more than 4 hours. If you're having more than 15 days in a month of headache, at that point, you probably should be looking at doing something about it. If you've had headaches for more than 3 months, so this is something you didn't have, then you're not having it more than 3 months, it's been going on, it's becoming chronic, it's definitely worth looking at. If you have had headaches and now they have changed in characteristic, the nature of your headache is no longer what it was, then it's time to have a conversation and say, let's assess this and make sure that it is a nothing headache. But if it's a headache in the back of your mind, you know what it is. You didn't sleep well. You haven't had coffee. You're not drinking enough water. Those kinds of headaches, those are more actually beneficial. That's your body telling you that you're doing something you probably shouldn't be doing, or you're not doing something you should be doing, and those are actually helpful. Those are things telling you to move in the right direction. When you're outside of those things, and most people can tell, or some people can't tell. They've had an abnormal headache so long that they're not even sure what's normal or not anymore. Fortunately, we have really good people in town who can help you piece that out.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. So I guess, you know, for people that have a concern about a headache, and we're going to get into the different types and the symptoms and the factors and everything as we go through here. But is this something that is best brought up, you know, with their primary care doctor if they have one? At what point does it get escalated to a pain management specialist like yourself?
That's a good question. And that's a good question. Before I come back to it, also that same question where we talk about pain in general, at what point does it come to a pain specialist? Consider that 95% of people have headaches. I don't think I need to see 95% of the population. You know, I know in medical school through our training, we have enough of a training in headaches that most primary care people are more than comfortable handling a headache. I think when the headache becomes more, when it's not satisfactorily or effectively managed in that venue, that's the time to elevate it up, to escalate it up. I'm happy to see anyone who has a headache, but I don't think I need to see everyone who has a headache. Pretty much every one of my patients has headaches. You know, you have chronic pain, there's stress, and we'll get into some of the types of headaches and you start to understand why it's so rampant. But also some of the headaches that we'll discuss here today when we start talking about migraines and clusters, and those ones are part of the ones where we need to start looking at specialty care to see what, to be able to explore what's been done, what what can be done beyond that.
Okay, excellent. So I'll tell you what, we're going to take our first caller here. It looks like a call related to migraines, so we'll probably start with that topic regarding the different types of headaches. But It looks like Amelia from Eagle River. Amelia, welcome to Line 1.
Hey, yes. Thank you for taking my question. I have a quick question. I do get occasional migraines with pain, no more than one or two a year, but I often have migraines with aura with no pain at all. I don't think they're ocular migraines because it's both eyes, and I get flashing at the side of my auras at the side of my vision, but I have absolutely no pain. Is this common, and is that something that I should be concerned about?
Great question, Amelia. Okay, so we're going to jump here right into migraines. We'll have you take your answer off the air since we're going to talk a lot about migraines here. But who wants to feel this one? Eric or Sola?
So what Amelia is describing is a migraine with an aura. And auras are usually some kind of neurologic symptom that accompanies a migraine, neurologic. And in this sense, it's usually going to be some kind of visual. So lights, flashing lights, curly lines, blind spots. Often an aura will happen before a migraine. Sometimes it happens during a migraine concurrently. She is also describing what we see as auras that do not accompany migraines. Now, if she's having an aura, she's had this for years, she has them once or twice a year, no other symptoms, nothing else going on, as long as it's not distressful or it's not distracting and it's not causing any distress, it's not something that I would necessarily think that we need to pursue aggressively. Assuming that she has been worked up and she has been evaluated and we know that there's nothing else going on.
Well, migraines are clinical diagnosis. There's not a certain lab test we can do or an imaging study that can say, yes, this is a migraine that's happening. What we end up doing is ruling out the bad things, the thunderclap headaches that are sudden onset or with new neurologic changes that need to be evaluated. So as long as you're not having any of those red flag signs, we just say, okay, it's a typical migraine or an atypical migraine, and let's just treat it and make sure you're functioning properly.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a few migraines in my life. Used to get them a lot more when I was in school, medical school and whatnot. I think they were a lot of stress triggers, but I would always get the aura and kind of start in the periphery and move in. And I knew that if I didn't do anything, then I'd end up being down for like an entire day, you know? Right. But if I could treat it or take medication prior to getting to the pain, it would most of the time, you know, nip it in the bud. So migraines, oh gosh, let's get into a little bit more because this is a common thing that people suffer from. Let's start with kind of the symptoms that are specific to a migraine headache, like what makes it a migraine headache. So Eric, let's start with you.
Typical migraines are unilateral, means they're on one side of the head. They're most often pulsating, throbbing. They can or often are accompanied by the photophobia, noises, smells can help or can exacerbate them. Those are your typical migraine characteristics. A lot of times they're also accompanied with nausea and vomiting.
Okay. Let me give our callers our numbers again here real quick as we're talking about migraines. If you're calling statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. Again, 888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Or email me, line1@alaskapublic.org. So let's get right back into the migraines here. So unilateral, pulsating, throbbing, potentially associated with aura, smell changes, and then the last part, nausea and vomiting. That seems like a pretty tough one.
Right,
like,
right.
Once we're getting into nausea and vomiting, that sounds like a terrible headache. Yeah.
Once you get into nausea and vomiting, that sounds like terrible life or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So how common are migraine headaches?
So migraine headaches are more common in women. Migraine headaches are more common in women when you get to older. And children, when you're children, there's about a 50-50% of all people who migraine will be about equal boys and girls. As you hit puberty, you have more of an incidence in females. And then after puberty, that number continues to rise up till about 40 years old. After 40 years old, which is where if you take all people with migraines and you look at them, most of them will be women. About two-thirds will be female. At 40 years old, the numbers for the females start to drop, and they drop until about puberty.
Would it be menopause?
Sorry. Yeah, they drop at menopause.
They're not aging in reverse.
No,
they're
okay, aging
darn it, darn it.
So, yes, it starts to drop at menopause.
Is that because there's different hormones at play here? Is that, or what's the theory behind, women having more common migraines?
So the exact mechanism of migraine headaches is unknown. We do know that there's a vascular component to it, which is to say that a lot of it has to do with the dilation or enlarging of the vessels in the brain. We do, because it is in women, suspect that there is some relationship to hormones. We don't really have a clear mechanism. And none of our treatments, most of our treatments do not directly address, say, estrogen. We do know that there's a genetic, we do know that people who are first-degree relatives of other people with migraines are more likely to have it. But when you look at migraineurs, there's not necessarily a genetic component to it. So that being the case, but this is migraine headaches. When you look at other types of headaches, now the incidence is higher in men versus women. So though we see it more, and it's also thought that part of the reason why it is higher in women is actually a two-thirds women is going to be higher if you actually look at all women. These are the women who present with it.
Okay, yeah. What about weight and migraine headaches? Because in my line of work as a bariatric surgeon, I see a lot of patients who complain of migraines. And actually, we have good literature through our bariatric research that suggests that the incidence of migraine headaches decreases after we do weight loss surgery. Is there a known relation between migraines and weight?
There is a known relationship between migraines and weight, yes. Part of our management of migraine headaches has to do with lifestyle modifications, which has to do with diets and exercise, et cetera. It is hard for me to say necessarily a one-to-one correlation between weight and migraines because weight is so nebulous. Then you start looking at the pre-diabetic issues and all the compromises that go there. And any of those stressors will cause a headache. Again, when you're looking at the numbers that we're saying for headaches that high, so anything that has to do with weight improvement will improve for people who have migraines or headaches. But weight is so nebulous. So much going on with weight that it's part. Our first-line treatments is going to be lifestyle management, which includes diet, exercise. There are triggers for migraines that have to do with foods that people eat, whether it's wines or cheeses or certain types of procured meats. But weight is a hard one to say yes. But it's a hard one to say no.
Well, yeah. Do you think is it the weight, or I don't know, with your bariatric patients, is it depression that comes along with being overweight and those feelings they might have? Because depression and headaches and chronic pain go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
So is it the weight that's causing, or is it the depression that goes along with it?
Well, and we don't have to get into the weight issue because I could talk about that forever, and then you guys aren't going
to
get to talk about anything. But
we'll have to come back and do that
when we do have significant weight loss in a patient, it changes every system, mm-hmm. including all of the GI hormones and many hormones. So it's multifactorial,
right.
For sure. But I do have a call here. David is calling from Petersburg. Welcome to Line 1, David.
Well, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My question was partially answered just a little bit ago. I used to suffer from migraines quite a bit, but now, more frequently than not, I just get the aura, surrounding the narrowing of vision. Sometimes I can't articulate what I want to speak about. And I found that I can kind of will this away, and it goes away after an hour. It rarely goes into pain. So I'm curious as to, is this something to worry about? Is it something that happens to people? I'm in my late 60s, I'm just kind of more curious about it, if you could expound upon that.
Yeah, thank you, David. We'll get in here with a little bit of the aura, and then we'll maybe start talking about some of the directed treatments, which, can kind of head off the aura, or if that's a first sign, then we can get some treatment going. So, yeah, Dr. Olamakin, please.
So David brings up a good point again about the persistent aura. Suppose David was a patient of mine and he came in and had really bad migraine headaches and proceeded with an aura, and I treated him. And now he had gone to the point where he was only having auras and no headaches. We would probably consider that a success. He no longer has pains. His auras are minimally distressful. He can will them away. Point is, if after assessment of David or any patient of this nature, we have determined that he's having straight migraines, and being a physician, I have to make sure, first of all, that we're not missing something that could be really detrimental. So we're taking that off the table. There's nothing detrimental going on besides a headache and a migraine. Now we've gotten him down to the point where it's only auras. If these auras are not causing a distress to life and they're not causing any issues and it's easily managed, I wouldn't worry about them anymore. I would consider this a good success. Now, if they are causing distress, whether personal or in a bigger social picture, then I would treat them as I would treat a migraine headache, which is to say, can we make them go away or not present at all? But we have to be careful in our management, because the medications and the processes we use can have their own side effects. So I'm not going to treat him to the point where he's now has more issues from the treatment than he has from the pathology that we're dealing with.
Excellent, yeah.
So it's a lot of balance that we're looking at. I hear a person who says, I had this thing, I'm a lot better, I'm really concerned about migraines. I'd say, let's assess your migraines. Let's check you out and make sure there's nothing going on. If all you're having is auras now, and they're not debilitating and not otherwise an issue, hey, you're a success. If they are, then let's see if we can manage it. But we have to stay cognizant that in management, we may cause more issues. And our first thing is to make sure that we don't do that.
Excellent. So we're going to take a break, but I'm going to give you a little preview here. There's a email here from Matt, who's 64 years old and has had migraines since early adolescence. Says that if he takes sumatriptan within about 20 to 30 minutes of getting the visual aura, he can, you know, usually keep the headache off, move on. If it weren't for this drug, it'd be hard to go on with job or carry on with life activity. So it sounds like one of the treatments here for migraine headaches. So we'll be getting into that here next after this short break. You are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guests today, call us statewide, 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. After this short break, we'll continue our discussion on headaches and chronic pain with Dr. Sola Olamican and PA Eric Severson.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
Welcome back, to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined by Dr. Sola Olamican and PA Eric Severson from Advanced Pain Centers of Alaska, and we are discussing headaches and chronic pain management. Call us toll-free statewide, 1-888-353-5752, 888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433, 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. So as I alluded to before our break, I actually have two emails here regarding treatments of migraines. The first is food. So I guess we can talk about, you know, potential triggers. In this particular email from Iris, sugar seems to be a particular trigger for that. So maybe we can talk about triggers of migraines. And then, of course, the sumatriptan, or we can get into the pharmacologic treatment of migraines as well. So who wants to start? Eric?
Yeah, so one of the first things we would have you do if you came in as a patient when your migraine's evaluated is, along with lifestyle changes, is a headache diary. We want to know what you're doing when it causes them, how long they last, if there are any certain foods that caused it, you know, what you did to abort the headache, and those type of things. So that can give you an idea of what foods and what stressors might be contributing to starting the headaches.
Okay, so keep a log, keep a diary. If this is something that's recurring, okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, you got the headache, what time did it start? And then you can think back, okay, what did I eat today?
Right.
Yeah,
and then avoid those items and see how that works for you. Yeah. That's part of our first line therapy, if you will.
Got it. Dr. Olenkin, any other triggers besides foods for migraine headaches?
Other triggers besides foods, yes. You know, there's a cohort of, speaking of women, who will have migraine headaches related and around their menstrual periods. Again, has to do with... we suspect has to do with hormone changes around that time, the estrogen cycle, the LH and CRGP cycles around that time. And so their management of those is in conjunction with their OB practitioners. How are those being managed? Well, then we add in things that they can use short term just around that, understanding the pathology that we're dealing with, the pathophysiology that we're dealing with. There are people who have headaches besides food from maybe exercise induced or sleep, lack of sleep induced headaches. Then they're the ones that probably most happen, which is you just don't know what triggered that migraine. You just have migraines, and there's not a whole lot that you can identify that triggers or doesn't trigger it. You want to talk about triptans?
Yeah, let's go into the triptan, because that's, I mean, my understanding, I guess, what would be the primary, and if it's not triptans, we can start with these, yeah. But what's the go-to first-line pharmacologic treatment for migraines?
Pharmacologic treatment for migraines is divided into two. We look at the abortive and the prophylactic. So the abortive are the ones when you're starting to have a headache, you take it. When you start seeing one coming on, probably with an aura, without an aura, as soon as you feel a headache going, you take it with the intention of making it go away. But if we know that you have headaches, if you're having a lot of them, if you're having a few severe ones, if you're having them frequently, then what we want to do is say, well, let's not even get headaches in the first place. So then we do the prophylactics, where you will take a medication so that you never hopefully even need to use the abortives. And then if we can take your headaches down from 100 to 2, then the two that you do have are easier treated with the abortive medications. The triptans are an old class of medications that were used. They work by decreasing the inflammation around the nerves in the brain by affecting the blood vessels. And by doing that, they are able to control the headache. The beautiful thing about the triptans is there's so many different types. There's the ones you put up in your nostrils, they're inhaled. They're the ones that you can inject into the skin, or into the sub-Q tissues. So those are both good for people who have a lot of nausea, so they can't really take a pill because they'll throw it back up. And then you have the ones that you can take orally, and they work over different durations of time. So the triptans allow that flexibility in management. The issue with the triptans, though, is they're an old drug with a lot of issues. They can affect use of patients who are on antidepressant medications, and there's a limit on how often and how much of the triptans you can use. Fortunately, the smart people who do the research that we all count on have come up with other classes of medications now. We have the CGRP inhibitors. That's the calcitonin-generated peptide inhibitors. Lots of words to say we have new drugs that are a lot safer on a profile for treatment of patients. The issue with these, so the plus of these is that they're super safe. The literature shows them being quite benign as far as the risk profile. The issue with them is they're new and they're expensive, and often we have to fail other medications before you can be on them, which is a common phenomenon in medicine. The nice thing is if you're doing fine on the older medicines, then you use them. Just because they're older doesn't mean there's nothing wrong with them. They're just older. They're better known. If you don't, whereas before we had nothing better to give you, now we have newer medications to give you. So now we wouldn't get some medications, triptans or otherwise, if we could control your symptoms with lifestyle modifications, if we can look at your headache diary and decide what you need is a better diet, better sleep, better hydration, better sleep hygiene, those things, things of that nature, is always where we would start, because it's really important to make sure that we treat the person. And if we can treat the person without adding on extraneous medications, then that's always the best thing to do.
Sure, sure. So the abortives are going to be the triptans. You can only use them a certain amount.
Yes.
You can't. They're not an everyday kind of medicine.
Yes.
They have side effects.
Right.
But lots of options.
Lots of
available,
options.
Which is nice. But now we have the newer drugs available as well.
Yeah.
Now, are the newer, these CGRPs that you describe, are these abortive or prophylactic?
So these go into both fields.
Yeah. Eric, you can elaborate.
Right. We do have... the abortives, which if you're having less than 8 per month, you're allowed to take. There's limits on the prescriptions, the amount they'll let you have. But if you're having more than that, we can also use some of them as prophylaxis as well. And those can be either injections or daily pills.
Okay. What are some of the names of those drugs? I don't know what.
We have Ajovy is one of those drugs. Nurtec is one of those. Qulipta is one of them. Those are
the
brand
more common
names.
Ones.
Yeah,
brand
the brand names. Yeah. We have some older ones, too, that are used. Emgality, which is actually used in cluster headaches.
That's for a monoclonal antibody, kind of like the Ajovy.
Yeah, that's also a monoclonal antibody. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Well, you know, and since you mentioned cluster headaches, you know, we got a couple different other types of headaches I would like to try and get to today. Although we may end up coming back to migraines, it's so darn common, depending on our questions. But let's move in. You mentioned cluster headaches. What's a cluster headache?
Cluster headache is a severe, sharp, stabbing headache. It's usually on one side of the head. You can also end up with runny nose, droopy eyelid, kind of Horner syndrome type symptoms with it. They're very difficult to treat. They're very difficult to have from what I've been told. I've never had one, thank God. But they're supposedly one of the most debilitating type headaches you can get.
Okay, interesting. So are these more common in men or women? Is this one of the different?
More common in men, yes.
So this is more of a male type headache, one side of the head.
Often it'll appear at the same time of day or around the same period of activities.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where does the name cluster come from?
The grouping of the timing of them.
Okay. So
they come in
often...
clusters of around the same times.
Interesting.
And they're usually on a circadian rhythm of some sort. So it may happen at the same time every year, the same time every day, same time every month, or the same time every week. And so that's one of the characteristics of them. So gender, yes, more common in women. Interestingly, so... Back to headaches. Let's back out to headaches. We're separating headaches into cluster and tension and migraines. You know, there's a school of thought that thinks it's more of a continuum with migraines on one end and maybe with tension on one end and migraine on the other, so that there's not a clear delineation of you have this versus that. In some people, and people talk about migraines, I think that's kind of a catch-all phrase. So when I see a patient, I'm not thinking, okay, do you have a migraine? I'm first thinking, what kind of headache do you actually have? Because the treatment is very different. Clusters, yes, more so in men. But then you have a phenomenon called a hemicrania, which is a type of cluster, which is actually more common in women. The cluster... Mostly with a migraine, people will sit still, want the darkness, want something. In a traditional cluster, you'll often have the patient screaming or shouting or making or very agitated, which is a very distinct difference from a migraine. And you can understand someone who doesn't understand what's going on saying, why don't you just calm down and you'll feel better? That's what I do. Well, that's not the pathology that you're dealing with. Whereas a hemicrania, which happens more in women, is exactly the same as a cluster, but then they tend to respond by sitting quietly. So a cluster in a woman would look like a cluster in a man. A cluster in a woman that is actually a hemicrania versus a cluster would have the person sitting quietly. So part of our treatment is determined by our assessment of that patient and talking to the patient and seeing what their behaviors are around that headache type.
So it's very interesting. So, I mean, a completely different, not only presentation, but then the treatment is totally different. So, so like getting back to kind of what we talked about at the beginning, it's like a headache is not just a headache.
It's not just a headache.
So a headache's a headache, you know, if it's a normal headache, but if they're happening, you gotta, you, to the treatment's so different that
it
you gotta
is.
Dive in a little bit. Okay. Right. All right, so cluster headaches, we talked a little bit about that. What is the, I mean, where do you go with that? What, like someone, okay, you've diagnosed them with classic cluster type headaches, they're happening on a monthly basis or a daily basis, like what do you, what's your first line treatment for that?
So because clusters happen the way they happen, they come for a while at a period of time and then they're gone. We tend to not use a lot of the abortive medications. By the time the abortive kicks in, the patient is, the headache is gone. So they just suffered it and it was gone. So with those, we try and put people on prophylaxis. We know when it's going to happen. We get them on the prophylaxis. We prevent it from coming in the first place. The issue with the prophylaxis is going to take a couple of weeks for it to work. So in that period, we may use the abortive medications. Then, we're using the triptans. We're using the CGRPs. We're using indomethacin. For that hemicrania I mentioned, it is exquisitely responsive to indomethacin, so which is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medication similar to the ibuprofens and the Celebrexes and those types of medications and aspirin. But we have very good responses to that. And so the treatment for the cluster is, as opposed to the others where we start with the abortive, here we would start with trying to get them good and strong on a prophylactic.
Okay, and indomethacin as a strong NSAID-type medicine.
For hemicrania.
For hemicrania, okay. Yeah. What about, like, Toradol? Is that a...
So Toradol we use, that's probably more of an abortive. We would use that. Toradol, then we'd like, you know, I have a headache, I'm going to give you a shot. Yeah, you'll take the shot because your headache is way worse, and people will take that. We'll use that in conjunction with IV infusions. We'll use some IV rehabilitation on that. Steroids, sometimes not really found to be particularly good. Toradol, yes. Another one, again, if they're throwing up and they can't hold down the other medications, mm-hmm. Toradol is a great idea for that.
Okay.
And I'm speaking specifically IM Toradol, because it can also be used PO, in which case it would go up in, higher up in the algorithm for abortives.
Okay. Excellent. So let's take our second mid-break here, and we'll get into a few other headache classes, and if we can squeeze it in, a little bit of relation to chronic pain there. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guest today, call us toll-free statewide, 1-888-353-5752, 888-353-5752, or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, 907-550-8433. After the short break, we'll continue our discussion on headaches and chronic pain with Dr. Sola Olomakin and PA Eric Severson.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined by Dr. Sola Olomakin and PA Eric Severson from Advanced Pain Centers of Alaska. And we are discussing headaches and chronic pain management. Call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752, or in Anchorage, 907-550-8433, 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. So we've talked a little bit about migraines. We've talked about cluster headaches. Another common headache on that spectrum seems to be tension headaches. And so I guess let's start with the definition. What is a tension headache?
Tension headaches are usually, unlike migraines, they're usually bilateral, which means both sides of the head is involved. They're not throbbing. They're more of a tight band-like sensation, just a pressure. They can be mild to moderate. A lot of times, increased stress can be causing them, can help bring them on. Anything else?
You know, the precise etiology of tension headaches is not as well known as the others. I will start with this. Tension headaches are the most common types of headaches that we see. They're called tension headaches. We think tension. We think stress. There's a correlation there. But they're also a very messy kind of headache. They can actually happen in conjunction with other headaches. You'll see a lot of occipital headaches will start at the back of the head. Another type of headache usually has to do with cervical spine, which is neck bone pathology. And these will start in the back of the head and come forward. And after a while, people say, you know, I'm just having this headache just mostly in the front now. And a lot of those will be the addition of a tension headache on top of another type of a headache. They're a challenge to treat because we had mentioned caffeine. Statistically, over 400 milligrams of caffeine a day can give you a headache. I use the radio announcer voice for that. But you see, the treatment of these actually is administration of caffeine. And so it's that balance, right? You take too much coffee, you get a headache. The type of headache could be a tension headache. But the treatment there is to take off that coffee. And then if treatment needs, then we use medications that have caffeine in them. The tension headaches often happen, they're treated more over-the-counter type things. You're using NSAIDs, you're using aspirin, you're using caffeine, you're using Toradol, things of that nature. And then what happens is these people can have a risk of what we call a medication overuse headache, where all of these medications that they've taken now are causing a rebound headache that is compounding the tension headache. So what's the treatment there? Well, now you got to detox them and clean them off all of those medicines, and that can take up to 2 weeks. I'm sorry, 2 months. The first 2 weeks of which is a profound rebound period where they have even worse headaches. So tension headaches are a very dirty kind of everywhere headache that can make other headaches worse, that can make chronic pain worse and, you know, obesity worse. You know, that's where you're starting to look at tension headaches. They're very nebulous type thing.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like not something I'd like in my life, quite honestly. We have a call from Miles in Eagle River. Miles, welcome to Line 1.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
I had a question going back to the migraine thing. I had migraines my whole life, starting when I was young, like a kid riding the school bus, terrible headaches, nausea, throwing up on the bus, all of that. And it lasted for decades. And then about 22 years ago, had a major life change. I got divorced and remarried, and I have not had a migraine since. I mean, I was on Hisminol. It was serious. I ended up in the ER several times on morphine for migraines, but they just went away. And I can't blame my ex-wife because I didn't know her when I was 10 years old. So why would that happen? Why would they just go away?
Great question, Miles.
I don't even get regular headaches anymore.
Great question,
Miles.
It
just happened. It just can happen. We don't know why. There are hormonal changes that can cause headaches to start or stop. Mm-hmm. Could that be part of it? Possibly. Could it be stressors, other stressors? We don't really know. It just does happen.
That's not a very satisfying answer.
I know,
Eric.
It's not. I know it's not.
Well, we mentioned at the beginning, Dr. Sola, that there is peaks and troughs, right? You said that women after puberty tend to increase.
Right.
But men, it tends to decrease. Maybe, theorizing here, Miles, as you're getting older, a decrease in testosterone. If there's any relation there, maybe that's causing less of a trigger. That's interesting.
Right.
Yeah. So it just happens. It's something you guys see.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's something that we see. We usually don't see the ones that get better, of course, because then they'll come in.
Yeah.
We see a lot of people who start it later on in life, and there's a lot of worry. You have to make sure that there's nothing to be concerned about. But yeah, we see this. And that's why we like to focus first on lifestyle changes, which looks like a significant contributor to his improvement.
Yeah. Yeah. Less stress for sure. Mm-hmm. So last question on headaches from me, and then we'll kind of get into their relationship with depression, chronic pain management syndrome. But because I've had a few emails regarding this one, is as Botox for treatment of headaches. All right. A tough one, but who's going to take this?
Botox is an excellent treatment for headaches. Specifically for migraine headaches is what is it will be approved for by insurance companies. And, you know, we won't get into what works and what is approved by insurance companies, but insurance will usually approve it for migraine headaches. With that treatment, there's a standard 31 injections in 7 different locations, and it works excellently for headaches. Now, Botox is a well-known drug. It's used by a bunch of different specialties in medicines for various different for different pathologies, whether it's PMNR or aesthetics or dermatology, plastic surgery, all use Botox. So it's well known. It's pretty safe. Usually, you'll start to see a response in about 2 weeks when we use it for migraine headaches, and that response can last for about up to 90 days of good benefit before we need to repeat it. We do that. Great outcomes.
So it sounds like it's well studied. It's formulaic, really. You said, I mean, it's there's specific.
Yes, there's specific places. So if you're getting Botox for other things in other parts of the body, it may not help your headache. It's not like taking an antibiotic where you take a pill and no matter where the infection is, if it's there, it's going to get treated. This one has to be done properly by somebody who knows what they're doing and knows where to put the Botox, because you're targeting specific regions of the skull and of the scalp with this medication. So getting Botox for, say, eyebrows or for spasticity in the leg probably will not get your headaches treated. So it has to be done properly, yes.
Yeah, definitely under protocol by someone that has specific training in Botox for headaches.
Exactly.
Yeah, good, good. Okay, so let's move on. We have about 10 more minutes here, and I do want to give you the opportunity to get into your bread and butter here about pain management. And I know I'm not doing it justice in 10 minutes, but what's the transition here? I'll let you take it over, but from headaches to the relation to chronic pain, maybe depression, all the other syndromes you guys are seeing in the office.
This is super broad.
I know.
This is super broad. So okay, let's define chronic pain. We're talking about pain. We're talking about pain, which is a noxious stimulus, an uncomfortable stimulus, usually related to tissue damage, but not always related to tissue damage. Then chronic pain is when the pain continues past the presence of the acute injury or 3 to 6 months. So then you can just say headaches are a type of chronic pain. I mean, logically then. So they're actually the same thing. All headaches are painful. Not all pain is headaches, right? In that sense.
So the relationship between the headaches and the chronic pain.
So we start looking at headaches now. You're looking at headaches, chronic pain. This is probably a good place where you see a lot of tension headaches, right? If the person is not having pathology, primary pathology of the headache. So a person with a cervical spine injury or cervical spine arthrosis, spondylosis, facet arthropathy, osteoporotic changes, osteopathic changes in the neck will cause irritation of the cervical spine nerves, which is the nerves that come out of the spine at the neck level. And at the upper neck, they go up into the back of the head and then go forward from there. Those will cause a headache. The pathology primarily there is a headache. That's what they present with. My neck hurts, and then I get this pain in the back of my head, and from there it just goes all over my head. That is a headache. So that's the one. On the other hand, you have a person who's got chronic back pain, and it limits their ability, it limits what they can do with life. It limits how much they can do, how much they can see, where they can go, how much of the wonderful Alaska life they can participate in. This person gets stressed. And I'm using that term colloquially, you know, they're stressed. They get headaches. Then they get the mood effect. They get depression. They get anxiety. They get fear, all of which are logical and make a lot of sense. It's we separate these things out, the chronic pain of the back from the depression, from the headaches. But really, when you look at the human condition, all of these things come together. And so our management has to encompass all of these. So you come in, we're looking at you, we're saying, how are we treating your headache? For instance, or how are we treating your back pain? How about your mood? Are there medications that we can use that will combine both? How about your activity? Can we get you into physical therapy, good physical therapy? Can we talk about a home exercise program? Because the human being who comes in, the person who comes in, is a single unit with all these different parts that are all affected simultaneously. Fortunately, we're not like cars. You can have a bad tire, but your radio still works. In a human being, when your back hurts, you're not going to feel good. When you don't feel good, you're not going to want to get out of bed. But you can't actually sleep in bed. So then you also have to address your sleep. All of that will affect your mood. Which is the chicken, which is the egg? We don't focus too much on that. We just say, well, let's get you treated. Right? Because in treating that person, chronic pain is almost, you know, I said pain is life.
Yeah.
Chronic pain is a life that keeps on going. What we can't accept is suffering, right? Can we take all this that you have and minimize suffering? Can we give you the tools? Because a lot of what we'll do is if pain is life, it's your life. I can't live it, but I can give you the tools to say, here are the tools that work to live your life effectively. Because, and here's what I always tell my patients, everything I'm telling you applies to me, right? I'm not like some guru with the results. I'm the same person who's also living, who also has pain, who's also dealing with pain, who also had challenges with mood, whether it's the seasonal affect, whether it's just I couldn't go hiking as far as I wanted because my back really hurts that day. And so a lot of it, we're kind of in this together, and I'm the expert, but I'm by no means an expert in your life. So I'm the medical expert, and let me take what I have and give it to you so that we can affect your chronic pain, affect your headache, affect your sleep, affect your relationships with the people that you love and care about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all related. And the mind-body connection is huge too.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it does affect everything, doesn't it? So just a quick clarification on the definition between acute pain and chronic pain for our listeners. Okay, I injure my back. I have acute pain. Maybe it lasts a week, 10 days, or I have to have a surgery, so there's pain for several weeks. At what point, what's the definition acute versus chronic?
Usually 3 months, 3 to 6 months.
Okay, so if pain moves in past about 3 to 6 months,
right,
then we're moving into a chronic phase of the pain.
Right.
Okay. And the treatment may be completely different.
Totally different, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We focus on a lot of procedures for pain. A lot of what we deal with is back and neck pain. So while we give you the tools such as the physical therapy, the home exercises, stress management, those things to work on yourself, we can also help eliminate some of the actual pathophysiological causes of the pain, like for the occipital headaches. We can do nerve blocks. We can help with the spine pain that's causing those headaches in the first place. While it may not take everything away, it can at least give you a basis to start working on the things that you can do to help.
Right. Help. And I don't want to go down this huge rabbit hole, but certainly I imagine, you can correct me, in your practice, there's been a big shift away from narcotic type pain treatments towards more non-narcotics, injections, that sort of thing. Is that the case, Dr. Olamakin?
To an extent, yes. So we don't want to go down the rabbit hole, but I'm the rabbit. I'm the pain doctor talking about pain. There is a shift. It's not just my practice. I think nationwide there has been a shift away from the opioid medications. The opioids were unfortunately used in a manner that has, I mean, turn on any radio station. If you listen to NPR, I'm sure it has caused a lot of issues that we are seeing. We have to separate that, though, because we're also starting to see that the management of pain with opioids was so one side. You got pain, you need an opioid. When in reality, you could get excellent management of the actual cause of the pain. Because what opioids do a lot of times is they blunt the pain, but they don't treat the cause of the pain. So what we're doing is trying to say, okay, let's not just blunt the pain, let's actually resolve the pain. Let's go to the cause of the pain, let's turn off the fire, don't just blow the smoke away. And I think that's, when we think about it that way, then it becomes a logical extension to say, wait, why are we just doing opioids, opioids, opioids? And it wasn't about, you know, getting away from opioids, at least in our philosophy. It was more about, can we get people back to life? Because I can numb your pain on a bunch of opioids, but you're not gonna do much. You're not gonna live the life that you said you wanted to live. and then you'll be present. You'll be alive but not present, you know, living but not present. And what we focus on is, let's get you present. And so when you look at it that way, it's a logical extension of that to say, wait, what else is out there? What can we do? What can we do to control the pain? What can we do to make sure that when I'm done with you, you're better off than when I met you, as opposed to now you're so gorked out that you just can't complain anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, guys, we have just about two more minutes here. We've gone over a lot of information. I want to give you guys a time to just kind of mention any closing thoughts, you know, let people know if they do want to talk with you more about this, how they get a hold of you. Eric, anything here?
You can definitely give our clinic a call, Advanced Pain Centers of Alaska. Our telephone number is 907-278-2741. So give us a call. We'd be glad to take care of you and get you back to function.
Yeah, thank you. And Dr. Sola, just some closing thoughts here. I know one thing I, you know, to give you the last minute here, we had talked previously about sort of the treatment philosophy, mission, vision. I love that part of your practice here. We've talked a lot about it today, but, you know,
thank you.
Any closing thoughts for our audience?
You know, pain is such a, it's such a broad, deep topic, and the effects on the person who's experiencing it is broad, and it's deep, and it affects just every aspect of their life. As a practitioner, it affects the people who are it affects us as we deal with the patient, because you can't really deal with a person if you don't get involved with it. We strive on that. I mean, so I'm at the Advanced Pain Centers of Alaska. We're on Abbott Road, South Anchorage, and we really look to make sure that we are doing right by our patients as best as we can. You know, fortunately, we are in a town with a lot of good pain practitioners. We're certainly not the only ones. There's a lot of good people doing good work in this town, but there's also a lot of people that probably have philosophies that are different from ours. And so we want to focus on getting you back to where you need to be. We want to get you back on your feet. We want to get you back to your family, back to your friends, back to living, back to doing all the things you came to Alaska to do. You know, that's what we want to do. We're seeing patients. We see patients Monday through Thursday. We do procedures Tuesday through Friday. I got excellent staff, excellent staff. I'd start naming them, but tell me not to. I'd start. Zahida and Diana and Dina and Shay and Miss Vicky and Eric and me. You know, it's a team of people who are there and trying to do the right thing for people, and that's what we do. So,
Great.
See us. Be glad to see you. Sit down, have a conversation. And then we have extensions. We have mental health. I have access to excellent mental health practitioners,
physical therapy
practitioners, you know, ancillary care, all these things, great opportunities to do that.
Well, thank you. Sounds like perfect timing here. Thanks, special thanks to our guests today for being with us. Thank you to our audio engineer, Dave Waldron, and our producer, Madeline Rose. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Stay healthy, Alaska.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.